Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to answer your automotive questions today is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your automotive questions now at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. When Gordon is on, it tends to be a popular show. So my advice to you is to call early. 800-348-2551. If you get a busy signal, we only have 10 lines, but when you hear someone hang up, that would be your cue to call. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here, and he will answer your car questions coming up. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon, and we bring on old familiar expert Gordon Fricke, who is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon Fricke, always great to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Once the program really gets rolling, the last one-third of the show, I don't get to too many emails, so if you have an email question, do it early. 800-348-2551, otherwise, on this call-in program. So what's new, Mr. Fricke?
Well, it's a nice warm day.
Yes,
a lot of traffic today coming down here. I thought I was going to have to call you.
Really? It would be late?
Well, not really. I mean, I leave pretty early, but it was packed.
Really?
Yeah, road construction, just heavy traffic.
There's that construction on Route 7.
Yeah, they're fixing those washouts from that massive flood storm we had.
And they put one of those temporary stoplights up.
Did you drive through there on your main trip?
In both directions.
Yeah.
And the temporary stoplights take a lot longer than the actual permanent stoplights I've found.
Yes. Yes, they do.
I was a little anxious to get home at that point.
Well, you know, if it's perfectly clear, can you just go through it, or do you think you really need to stop?
There was work going on.
Yeah.
I mean, because we came home on a Monday, and they were doing work.
Yeah. No, they worked hard. They worked around, not around the clock, but they did a lot of work on that.
Yeah.
They got it done.
Well, you know, we always take the back roads. It's always a nice ride up through Vermont and then through New Hampshire and then into Maine.
Yes, we ride motorcycles along that route quite often. It is very nice going through those mountains.
It's beautiful, but you need brakes.
Brakes are a good thing to have.
And there are spots where they have the truck runoff ramps. Have you ever seen a truck actually go up those runoff ramps?
I've always joked when we were on family trips thinking, "Hey, guys, you think we should maybe pull into that ramp if I can't get the car stopped fast enough?" You know, but it's no joke.
I make that joke all the time.
Do you really?
And frankly, after all these years, everyone says, "Will you shut up about it?"
Well, you're always telling me your brakes are marginal.
They are marginal.
Yeah.
But I'm fairly marginal myself. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Mark in Scotia is first. Mark, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a good automobile repair story where my wife's van broke down. We had it towed to our regular garage, and they told us that it was going to cost $5,000 for a new transmission.
Ouch.
So I had it towed to my regular transmission guy over in Rotterdam, and it was a broken drive shaft and was repaired for $400, plus he changed the transmission fluid and the filter and checked out the differential.
Wow.
My wife got on the phone, called the original garage where she'd been going to for years. The next day I went up with the receipt, and that garage paid the $100 that they charged us for the inspection about the bad transmission, which it wasn't. And then he also paid for the $400 for the drive axle repair.
Wow.
I think he felt very embarrassed that they missed the boat on that one, and pretty honorable that he covered your expenses.
That is really a great story, Mark, and a rare one. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Sabrina in Ghent. Sabrina.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a 2007 Subaru Forester that I adore, and it has an air conditioning issue, which, as you can imagine, for the last 6 weeks has really been tough to get through. And basically, when the air conditioner is on, it functions beautifully, but it constantly goes out. It's sort of like a connection thing, maybe, because for a long time I was able to kind of rev the engine in neutral or kick it into like second or first, you know, like to try to rev that engine, and it would then kick on for a while and then it'll sort of go out. Sometimes I'll park it and turn it off and run an errand just to let it heal itself. And when I turn it on, it'll kick in again for a while. And sometimes it'll go for 2 or 3 days working beautifully, you know. Yeah. So I just, what are your thoughts?
So when it works, is it working great? In other words, you're not getting weak air conditioning at best. When it works, it's fine.
Right.
Okay. Here's a few things that I find happening to vehicles when you get air conditioners that function great, and then maybe 20 minutes later they just fail as if somebody turned it off, and then it comes back later. There's a relay, air conditioning relay. It's an electrical component that turns the compressor electrically on and off, and it gets signaled by the controls for the air conditioner or the computer, and those relays can get tired. They can get too hot. Obviously, they're being worked the most in the summer, and that relay can temporarily fail. And when things cool off, it starts working again. I've replaced more than one of these just this year, so that's one component.
That's a cheap fix, right?
It is very, very inexpensive. Yeah, it's just catching it in its failed mode, and then quickly getting it diagnosed or getting another relay ready to switch with it to see if that immediately fixes it.
A relay, they can't cost, I mean, that much. Couldn't you just buy one and
yes,
put one in and spin the wheel?
You could. That would be a very low-cost gamble.
That is something that's not specific to the Subaru. That's a generic replacement.
It would want to be a air conditioning relay for that car. But even in that case, they're not giant money. The other thing we see periodically is, and this is not so cheap, I have seen the compressor clutches fail in the same way. They get too hot, the winding, something goes wrong internally, and it won't engage the compressor anymore. So you lose your air as if somebody switched it off, and then comes back 20 minutes later, and it may last for hours or it may last for another 5 minutes. And in that case, we have had to replace the compressor itself. And that's way more costly.
Now, Sabrina mentioned revving the engine or throwing it into second and getting it to kick on. Is that a clue or is that just a coincidence?
That's why I asked her if when the air worked, it was normal and strong and cold. But if it was weak, speeding up the engine speeds up the compressor and gives you a little bit more cooling ability than sitting at idle. Mm. Sitting at idle in hot traffic is the toughest on the air conditioner because it's not getting much airflow past
right.
the condenser. The compressor's not turning fast. So that I kind of ruled that out when I asked her that question.
Okay.
So those two things I would be thinking about.
And what's the most expensive possible problem Sabrina has?
Well, the compressor's not a cheap endeavor
to
fix this particular problem. I doubt it's in her, I mean, it could be in her controls. It's not likely to be in the evaporator, which is inside the car.
It's not a thermostat issue where there's a sensor that says, it's plenty cool enough.
Well, there is a sensing switch that tells the system that it's okay to turn the air on and off. It's called the high-pressure switch.
Yeah.
There's also a low-pressure cutoff. That can also become in question. But this is requiring some testing and confirming that that's it or not.
Well, good luck, Sabrina.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. We go over to Ann in Great Barrington. Ann, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 2004 cross-country Volvo wagon. I bought it at $70,000, and I won't go into the details, but Volvo ended up having to replace the motor.
Oh, boy.
The engine. Yeah. So the good news was I was thinking, gee, I could be able to keep this forever. I'm close to $200,000, and when I took it in recently, the guy, of course, they always want you to buy a new car because I took it to the dealer.
Absolutely.
He said it's not worth it to keep it. And I mean, look, brakes, tires, those are things I don't count because you have to replace those on any car.
Yeah.
Of course, they're more expensive with a Volvo. But he said that, you know, my exhaust system was starting to get rusty. He welded a hole at the bracket of my catalytic converter, which I know is extremely expensive if I should have to replace that. But, you know, the car drives great. I don't know. I guess what can you have any thoughts about how I can judge?
Yeah.
Whether or not it's worth keeping.
Do you normally bring it to a Volvo dealer for your maintenance and repairs?
He lives kind of far away, so I don't bring it every time.
Do you have a independent repair shop that you've done business with that you could bring the car to and say, could you just give me...
look it over?
Yeah, just give me a thorough check over of the overall condition of this car. Do you see anything uh-huh. that's looming that I need soon that would prompt me to get another car? Take a look at the condition of the transmission fluid. Get a third-party assessment of the condition of the car. And nobody can predict the future, but if there are some big trouble signs showing up, they might say to you, hey, look, your steering rack is leaking. Your transmission fluid is dark. The exhaust is ready to go. And you may add up $5,000 worth of repairs, which might say to you, okay, maybe I should think about it, you know? Yeah. That's what I would do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, if he wasn't able to weld those holes on the catalytic converter, I was thinking... But, you know, the rest of that is rusty. He mentioned a few things, but, you know, you expect things to go in an old car. It's just, I can't.
Well, Volvos do last a long time.
Yeah.
I've got a handful of them that I service, and I have sold various XC70s and XC90s over the years. And they do last a long time. You got to put some things into them like anything, but they have the potential. They're a good, solid car.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot. We have to take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is with us. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Hudson Headwaters Health Network, providing comprehensive primary care to more than 5,000 square miles of the Adirondack, North Country, and Glens Falls regions. HHHN.org. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Authentic Mexican lunch, you pick fruit, petting zoo, fresh market, cider donuts and bakery. Now open, Love Apple Art Space. 518-828-5048.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here along with Gordon Fricke, who answers your automotive questions at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email the program. We get to a few of those per show at voxpop@wamc.org. And Gordon, this one came in from John via email, who writes, one of the appeals of owning electric cars is supposedly the lack of maintenance costs, brakes, oil, etc. Is that true? What other expenses are there that electric cars do have? And that's from John.
Yeah, that's a good question. If he's talking full electric, yes, there's no engine. You know, there still is a drivetrain of sorts.
No engine?
If it's full electric, it's an electric motor. So there's
it's a motor.
Yeah, but there's not a gasoline engine.
Right.
Like a hybrid car has a gasoline engine, and it has an electric motor.
Right.
And the gasoline engine charges batteries that run the motor.
So,
brakes are an issue, but they don't use up brakes like gas cars do because they do regen braking. So when you take your foot off the accelerator, it generates current to put back into the batteries while you're decelerating. So you're not using a lot of brakes.
Oh.
So they're easier on brakes.
Yeah.
So he's correct. Other than the stuff that might fail electrically, they could be a much less maintenance vehicle.
I would imagine when the batteries do go for an all-electric, it's got to be a fairly pricey endeavor.
It is, but you know, when the hybrids first started entering the market, the fear was battery replacement.
Yeah.
And at first, I think they were thinking 5-6 years, and then it turned out they were really lasting 10.
Hmm.
So now 10 plus years is not out of the question.
That's pretty good.
That's remarkable.
But what about weather conditions? In other words, if you have a two-way radio and it has a lithium-ion battery and you're in cold, cold weather, that battery's not going to behave as the same way, or if it's very hot. So are these all-electric batteries or hybrid batteries affected by northeast weather conditions?
I'm sure they are, Ray. I don't know if they suffer like a wet cell battery, you know, your conventional battery that starts your car, lead acid. They fail a lot in super hot weather, and they can fail in super cold weather, and their efficiency changes with temperature. I think the lithium ions are way more stable, but I'm sure it does have an effect on them.
And that's the state of the art? That's what they use, lithium ion?
I think so, yeah. Okay. And I'm sure they're developing new stuff every year to extend their life, make them smaller. A customer just stopped by today, 10 minutes before I left to come down here, and he's got a new, the latest version of the Prius, and it looks more like a conventional car.
Yeah.
It's a plug-in. It has a longer range and more batteries, but he opened up the hatch, and he said, look how much trunk space we've lost because this car's packed with batteries to extend its range.
Hmm.
And I said, John, they're going to, you know, in the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, those batteries are going to shrink. They're going to be more efficient. They're going to be lighter. I'm sure they're going to.
You hope.
I'm sure they will.
Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and Chris in Cornwall is on. Chris.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I have a new Mini Cooper, a 2017 Cooper, and I discovered shortly after taking delivery of it that it's got the most pathetic and anemic little horn that you've ever heard. It sounds kind of like a nut hatch, but that's more Rich Guthrie's territory.
That was yesterday. Yeah.
So I went to the dealer and I honked the horn for him, and they said, "Oh no, that's not right. It should be a two-note job." And they said, "Well, it needs a part," and they ordered the part, and I took it in. And then, as it turns out, they said that the 2017 Coopers, the three-cylinder Coopers, have just this one-note horn, this pathetic little peep of a horn.
Nice.
But there is a mounting bracket, evidently, for the second horn, which normally it would have, which the four-cylinder Coopers have. And my question is, would it be possible to retrofit this with a two-note horn, or do something else entirely? Because I see it as a safety issue.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that, because we took a call, I think, within the last several months, same question.
Yeah,
and it
I remember
was,
that.
And I said, I'm sure your new Mini Cooper has dual horns. They always have, and they have a nice, sharp, loud European horn, and I'm sure that they either forgot to connect it at the factory or there's something wrong.
Right.
And I'll bet you it's the same situation as you've encountered, that the dealer apparently wasn't aware of it until you blew the horn.
Yeah, right.
And I agree.
And my wife has an 04 Cooper, and her horn, we compared them side by side because I was saying to her, there's something wrong with this horn. And we honked hers, and then we honked mine.
Yes.
And they're very different.
I agree with you. I don't like the sound of a single-tone horn.
No.
So I can't believe that since there's a bracket there ready, that car could not accept a dual-tone set of horns. I think I would check with Mini, because the car's brand new, and
right,
just make sure it's pre-wired. I would assume that it's ready for those horns. And I think the factory is purely saving money by deleting that horn, because if you make 100,000 of those cars and the horns are $5 a piece,
right,
that makes a difference to a big car maker.
Right.
But I would get a
right
second horn.
I would get some Cadillac horns for the thing.
The mounting bracket is there, but there's no wiring harness.
So it's not pre-wired for that second horn?
No.
It's going to be a little bit more of a job to get that horn wired. If the circuit can handle it, you could, a technician could tap into the same feed add a second horn and wire them together, as long as there's a horn relay, which I'm sure there is, so you're not overloading the circuit. But I think a second horn could be added in there.
Right.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. It doesn't make any sense that they would have two different relay boards. In order to say, in other words, they wouldn't be saving money. They would have to have the same relay board and just one less horn.
Yes, I think the car could handle dual horns.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if in Europe or other countries, maybe that model does have dual horns. But companies do that.
What a jip.
The lower priced models will eliminate things like that.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Ryan in Warwick. Ryan, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello.
Hi. So I have a 2003. It's a Ford Focus station wagon, and I started having trouble with the back gate. When I go to hit the key fob to pop it, it stopped working. So I thought maybe the battery on the key fob was starting to go, but it still does the doors. So while I was trying to figure out how to change the battery on that, a couple of days go by, and then the button on the dash that also pops the trunk, that stopped working too. So the only way I can open up that trunk, that back hatch, is to use the key, which is kind of annoying. So I was trying to figure out you know, where to go from here.
Yeah. So what's back there is there's an actuator at the tailgate where the latch is. Hmm. And when you either push the button on the dash or hit the button on your fob, an electrical signal goes back to that actuator and pops open the latch, just as if you would push the button in the olden days. I would guess that either the actuator is at fault, or did you say this was a wagon? It is, correct?
It's a wagon.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would be suspicious of the wires that connect the tailgate to the body of the car. And if you look up at the hinge, there's going to be an area where all the wires that feed the stuff in the tailgate go into the roof. And over the hundreds of maybe or thousands of opening and shutting of the tailgate, could have broken one of the wires, and that wire could be the one that feeds that actuator for the tailgate. And if anything else back there doesn't work, that could lead you to that. Let's say your license plate lights don't work or some things like that. So I'd be concerned about the actuator back there and or the wiring to it where it leads to the tailgate. Those would be the first two things to check.
Okay.
Now, when I used to, if the hatch was already open and I hit the button again, I'd hear that little mechanical sound, and that was probably the actuator.
Yes, yep, that's exactly.
When I push anything now, like there's no sound.
Yes, so I'm thinking
would that indicate the actuator?
Well, either that or the actuator's not getting the electrical signal to operate. So I wouldn't blame the actuator yet. I'd confirm that it's getting power to do its thing.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Ryan, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. 800-348-2551. Paul in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1997 Mercury Sable, and I have a misfire in a number 4 cylinder. I've replaced the plugs, all 6 plugs, a set of wires, and the ignition box, and it'll run fine for a while. I'll take it about maybe 5 miles down the road, and then the thing will let loose again, and the check engine light will start blinking.
And it does continue to give you the same cylinder as the one in trouble. What did you say it was, cylinder 6?
Cylinder 4.
4.
And it's the same cylinder every time.
Yeah.
Every time we plug it in, it's a number 4 cylinder. Yeah.
Did you say you changed the ignition coil also?
I did.
Yes, okay. Well, here's the thing with misfires. Oftentimes they are caused by a spark issue, whether it's the spark plug, the spark plug wire in the case of an older car, or the coil. But it can also be the fault of the fuel injector, and that is a little bit tougher to diagnose. You've ruled out pretty much all of the electrical stuff for the most part. The only other thing you need to check would be the make sure that cylinder has adequate compression, because if the cylinder is getting weak, it's not going to have enough compression and it will misfire and the computer will pick it up every time. So I'd be concerned that it could be an injector problem, and the quickest and easiest thing to do first would give be to give the car some treatments of Tecron in the gas tank.
Oh, yeah.
And if the injector is partially clogged, it's going to starve that one cylinder of fuel, and that one will do the skipping or the misfiring. So give it a couple of back-to-back treatments of 20 ounces of Tecron. Follow the instructions on the can, which is not anything elaborate, but pour it in, fill it up, drive it close to empty.
Yep.
See what happens at the end of that session, and you may have it solved.
That would be great.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke is here. Alex in Leeds. Alex, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 2009 Hyundai Sonata that I bought brand new. It's got 176, almost 177,000 miles on it right now. And about a month and a half ago, my ABS system failed. The electronic stability control light came on and all power went away from, you know, acceleration. I replaced two speed sensors for the front wheels, and I'm wondering if there could be any other issue besides that.
So what prompted you to replace those? Did somebody scan it, or do you have a scan tool that led you to a wheel speed sensor?
I took it to a mechanic that I go to regularly first, and he replaced the computer for the computer in the car. I'm not sure what computer he replaced.
Having to do with the ABS or the stability, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he replaced that computer, and then he also checked everything else, and I had done some reading on some Hyundai forums, and I guess that was a pretty consistent problem with people having similar symptoms.
Yeah.
So I asked him about it. He didn't replace the speed sensors. He just did the computer.
Yeah.
I replaced the speed sensors myself. I just finished the right one today. I did the left one yesterday, and the light came on while I was driving today. And I'm just waiting to see if it's fixed or if it's not fixed.
Yeah. What you should do now that the light just came on, get it scanned. See what the code reads. And that will lead you to the area of trouble. It won't tell you exactly what to fix, but it could be a wheel speed sensor issue. And there's two more to go. You have one on each wheel. But I wouldn't just replace them all. I would try to get it scanned now that you've got a fresh warning light on, and just see what it tells you. If it says signal failed, let's say right rear wheel, there's a good chance it could be a rear wheel speed sensor or the tone ring that feeds it the signal. But, you could be certainly on the right track, but I would do a little more testing rather than just replacing things unless those sensors are fairly inexpensive. You know, unfortunately, sometimes we have to change a part when we test around it to confirm it, but you don't like to do that if you don't have to.
Okay. Yeah, this was a relatively inexpensive fix. It was, under $100 for both of them.
Okay. Well, Alex, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Jen in Cornwall. Jen, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2011 Subaru Outback. And the problem, I took it to my mechanic. He sat with me and drove it and saw the problem, and I can't figure it out. What happens is when you make a stop, a complete short stop, the car is dead. It stalls. And I've been doing it with, it has that paddle where you could actually do it within it was not an automatic. You could set the paddle and just set the speed yourself. And it doesn't do it then. So he thought maybe it has to do with the transmission, and he changed the transmission fluid. And it was okay for a little bit, but it's doing it again.
Here's the thing that you've got to determine as to the cause of the stall. And when you come to a stop, does it feel like a car that has a manual transmission that you forgot to push the clutch in? Does it give you that feeling that
it just like stops, like, you know, it doesn't shake or anything. It just stops.
And it starts right back up?
Yes.
What you could do, how frequently does this occur? Every time you stop or just once in a while?
Well, you're losing your connection, Jen. Give it one more try.
Oh, when you stop at a stop sign, you know, full stop will do it.
Okay. All right, we lost you, but you can listen on the radio.
Yeah, so what I was trying to explain to her is when does it stall and what's the cause, and that's what she wants to know. If the transmission is the issue and it's chugging the engine and stalling it, you'd feel a lot of shuddering and shaking.
Yeah.
You remember the days with manual shift cars? If you slowed down too far without pushing the clutch in,
yeah,
you knew it. I mean, the car,
absolutely,
you know, whoa, I got to push the clutch in. Well, that's the same feeling she would get if the transmission was hanging up and not
shifting
allowing
down or shifting
and
up.
It certainly is possible. So I'd recommend, if it's doing it very frequently, come to a few stops in neutral. Put it in neutral and see what happens when you come to a stop.
Very interesting.
If it still stalls, you took the transmission out of the equation. Now it's an engine control. It's an idling control, that kind of a thing.
I mean, many years ago, I had a car and had it for a long time, 100,000 miles or whatever, and it would start stalling when I hit stoplights. It was the plugs. The plugs were old and shot, and as soon as I replaced the plugs, bam, it was fine.
In cars of that era, stalling was a fact of driving.
Yes.
Cars don't stall anymore.
No.
And when they do, it's a big event for people. But in the 60s and 70s and 50s, it was just part of driving.
This was the early 90s. Well, it was a manual.
You caught the tail end of it.
Yeah, there you go. Latham. Tom in Latham, you're on.
Hello there. Thanks, Ray and Gordon. Hello. A couple quick questions, hopefully, and I hope they're not too difficult. I'm sort of thinking, you know, down the road a few years from now when I'm looking at buying a new car, I'm interested in all the developments in the electric vehicle world. But living here in the Northeast with the weather that we get or we're used to get with the extreme cold, are there constraints on limitations on electric vehicles? In all electric vehicles in cold weather.
All right, let's hold that thought. I apologize, Tom, but I'm overdue for a break. So hang on the line. I'll put you on hold, and we will come right back to you. It's 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here, and Tom and Latham, we'll get to you next.
Support comes from Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement and educational seminars across central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, Massachusetts, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists, providing website branding and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here along with Gordon Fricke, and we answer your automotive questions every so often. Today is the day, and Tom in Latham, you were on, and now you're on again. You had a question about electric vehicles in cold Northeast weather.
Yeah, that was part one of that was I had one of two questions, and that was the first of the two questions. And basically, just to know and understand what kind of limitations there might be on electric vehicles in really cold weather, if any.
Yeah, well, there's a few concerns. You know, I'm sure the efficiency is going to be down, but it will be on anything that rolls when it's zero out.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to keep in mind, if you're going to a full electric car, Tesla or whoever, Chevy Volt, in order to get heat, you need to use electricity from the batteries. So if you've got a record cold winter, you're going to be using a lot of your battery energy to heat the car. So that's right. A concern. I don't know how great that's going to impact the overall picture, but that is how those cars get their heat, where a hybrid car uses the hot water from the engine. And that, of course, runs the engine more in the winter to keep the hot water hot.
Well, I grew up with my dad's I learned how to drive on my dad's Volkswagen thing, so I learned how to survive without any heat in the car at all.
Yeah, anybody that drove Volkswagens of that era without the gas heaters knew that you didn't have much heat.
A Volkswagen thing, wow.
That's really no heat. There's no insulation there.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, what was your second question?
I drove that one around Delmar. It was a nice yellow Volkswagen thing, and that was a good one.
Nice. What's your second question?
That was a good one to have. My other quick question was, I have a 2009 Toyota Matrix, when I bought the car, I was just looking for a hatchback, and I thought I had a good one. And when after I bought it, I realized I should have done a little bit more research on the fact that I got the Toyota Matrix Sport Edition, and I didn't realize at the time that because it was the Sport Edition, the tires were going to be special.
Yeah,
and that meant that they were going to be a lot more expensive than the regular tires. And I almost had a heart attack when the dealership here in Latham said, yeah, you're going to have to pay $139 for one tire.
Yeah, a lot of people, and that happens to a lot of people today with just about every car that has any sport edition, and even not so sporty.
$139 is not that much for a tire anymore.
There's so many low-profile, high-performance tires, and they last about half as long.
That's
twice
great.
As expensive right. and half the life.
Ain't life grand.
So where do people go if they don't have a lot of money? Hello.
Yeah.
Are there any options for people to find more cost effective tires than having to go to the dealer paying that paying that amount?
Yes. Originally, all those low-profile, high-performance tires were select, and you couldn't buy them from that many tire makers. Now there's a lot more options with all-season versions that are not as horribly expensive, but they're still performance-rated, and they're still wide, and they're low-profile, and they don't last as long. So you can do more tire shopping than you used to, but they're still more expensive. So other than that, getting a car that has more conventional or not as low-profile tires is an option, but that's a whole other car at your next purchase, you know?
Yeah. All right, Tom, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Laura in Monterey, Mass. Laura, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 2005 Hyundai Elantra.
Okay.
And one day when I was putting the window down, it broke. It just sort of fell out of the frame. They're electric windows.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to know if there's any way a layman might be able to fix this without actually taking it to a body shop. I did take it to like an oil change mechanic shop, and they told me they didn't do body work and that it was a bigger job.
Yeah. Well, that's not really in the realm of an auto body shop. We fix windows all the time. Window regulators are fairly problematic in various cars. And the regulator is the winder. It's the mechanism that raises and lowers it. And sometimes the electric motor is part of it. Sometimes it isn't. We have had cases where the window falls into the door or it gets jammed up and you take it apart and something came loose, got in the way, or became disconnected. And that, and that can happen. It can be not such a horrible event. A regular repair shop can handle window regulators and window repairs. It doesn't have to be a body shop.
So you were putting it down and then it just slipped right out, Laura?
I was putting it down and the window basically just fell right down
into the door.
Yeah. I've had that happen.
Yeah, it's not a good feeling.
It appears that the regulator still works because if I try to put it up or down, I can hear it working.
Yeah.
The window's no longer in the right place.
Is it making any weird sounds when you're operating it now, crunching sounds?
I've actually been driving with the window up for a couple of months because I didn't want to chance it falling into the door again.
So what did you do? Fish it up out of there and just tape it up?
Just had a friend hold it while I, had the up button on the regulator.
That's not going to be a huge deal.
Well, it could be that the regulator itself is getting tired. And I thought it fell into the door and that was the end of the show, but you were able to sneak it back up.
Yeah, just don't open the window
all the way down.
Do you have Easy Pass, Laura?
I don't. I used to.
Because, I mean, that's tough when you have to go to – I've had this problem with my driver's side window and my
– Oh, how many people have you seen at the toll booth with the door open? Reaching, and you say to
yourself,
oh,
yeah, you got to get
fast
food and you're the only one with your door open. Yes.
Of course, in Massachusetts now, they just take your picture. You don't even need to go to the toll booth.
They'll bill you later.
Yeah, Laura, thanks a lot. Good luck with that. We go over to Dan in Saratoga. Dan.
How you doing?
Good.
Ray and Gordon. So I've heard a few of your callers asking about electric cars. So I'm on the road right now in my my Tesla Model X.
Nice.
That's their new all electric SUV.
Cool.
I just, you know, I wanted to just share some insights about driving it. I've had it for about a year. I drove it every single day this winter. I mean, it was not the worst winter we've had up here in the Northeast, but you know, certainly
bad.
It'd share cold days.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd say with it's dual motor all-wheel drive, absolutely the best handling car I've ever had, ever driven on a bad road. You know, and I will say in the winter, the batteries, they lose some efficiency. And like your guest said, that's amplified by using the batteries for the heating.
Right.
Because it's a nice car. I got heated seats, heated steering wheel, heated wipers.
Nice.
But what you can do is you can set it to preheat the cabin while it's plugged in from inside from your cell phone. You get in, it's already at temperature. So when you unhook it from your power cable, your batteries are full. Your cabin's already warm.
Yeah,
that's great.
But you will lose up to about 40% of your range on the coldest days.
Right.
But on a mild day, it's no problem.
What's the range on a mild day?
On a good day, I can easily clear 250 miles on a charge.
Well, that's very good.
And then you know, I've plugged in at the Tesla superchargers. 15, 20 minutes, you can make it to the next one.
And is that...
You know, it's... we road trip on it.
Is that supercharger, is that 440 volts?
It's a 400-ish DC volts.
Yeah.
So it actually is direct into the batteries, and the regulator is in a big power cabinet kind of out of the way.
Yeah.
The stall you see is just a cable. Hmm. But they're putting about 400 amps at current battery voltage up to about 400 volts.
Yeah.
So they're huge. They're 120 kilowatts straight into the car.
I'm amazed that they don't explode more often. That's a lot of juice going into a battery really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not a battery. It's they're about double A's times 8,700 or so. So it's divided up pretty fine.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them in there. Yeah.
Well, Dan, thank you. That was very interesting. Let's go to Rod in Albany. Rod.
Hi, I've got a question about a recurring phenomenon I can't get to the bottom of, and I'm sorry because one of the critical factors I expect is knowing the RPMs that this thing occurs. But in any case, this is a chattering that occurs at about 40 miles, around 40 miles an hour. It is attendant only on, as best I can tell, only on motor speed, not on land speed, not on wheel speed, because the only way to get it to stop is by increasing engine speed or lowering the engine speed, in which case it stops. If you don't do one of those things, it will go on and on and on. It of course translates into a chattering in the drive in the steering shaft, and it's not a terribly serious. It doesn't rattle your bones, but it's
what kind of car is this? I don't know if we got to the vehicle.
06 Honda, right?
2005 Honda CRV.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So you're feeling this only on steady cruise, not accelerating to climb a hill, but not decelerating to slow down.
That's
right. Right in the middle.
Yep. On a absolutely steady.
And how many miles around the car, roughly?
Something over 100,000.
Yeah. On a CRV, this is an all-wheel drive, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yes. There is the possibility that it's your drive shaft that goes from the transmission to the rear wheels, or possibly in the center bearing that supports that shaft in the middle of the car. That can be in like a flutter mode when you're not really getting much power. You're just kind of cruising.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say the feeling is gone when you take your foot off the gas, and it's gone when you put your foot on the gas, correct?
Yeah.
I would be concerned of a drive axle in one of the front wheels one of the CV drive axles and or the rear drive shaft. I think it's a propeller shaft issue, whether it's the front drive shaft or the rear drive shaft. And that's what usually shows up in that flux mode when you're barely asking for any power. You're just on a really light, mild cruise.
I see.
That's where I would be checking all the drive axles and shafts.
All right, Rod, thank you very much. And let's see here. Oh, gosh. Jeff in Johnsonville, you're next. Jeff.
Yes, sir.
You're on. Uh-oh. Did we lose him? Oh, man. All right, listen. We'll go to another call. And he waited about 20 minutes to get on. Let's go to Jeff in his car. Jeff, you're on.
Hi, Ray.
Hey.
All right, my question is a general question about brakes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure, go.
Okay, surging brakes from a warped rotor. I've got it in my 2013 Toyota Sienna that has about 45,000 miles on the current set of brakes and rotors, pads and rotors.
Yep.
I'm talking to somebody else, guys. Is it a specific driving style? Because this is a problem I've had from one vehicle to another. I develop it through three quarters of the way through the lifespan of a set of pads and rotors.
Yep.
I'm starting to think, is there a common way that I drive that causes that?
Yeah. We see warped rotors so often. It's probably more common than pads wearing out. Part of the reason is car makers have downsized the bulk of the brake rotors. They're thinner and less bulky, and so they can absorb less of the heat under braking. So eventually they're all going to warp. Some people just let them warp and run them to the end, and that's the end of the story, and they need new brakes.
Yeah.
The other thing we see causing brake pulsation very often is rust. Rust gets on the rotor surface, and it starts to distort the surfaces, and you get the same feeling. It's as if the rotors warp because all these high and low spots of rust are coming by and hammering the pads back at you. There's really no great alternative other than cars that don't get driven daily are more prone to it because they sit around and then the rust builds up.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly not my issue. I put 1,000+ on a week.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So it could be the rotors are getting thin.
I think it's just the nature of the brake technology and the size of the brakes that you may not be able to do anything about if that's the way you drive.
Oh, I tell you what, that's...
And
it's cheaper parts. I think we have Jeff now in Johnsonville. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, most of me. How are you?
Good. You're on, man.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2002 Saturn. It was my mom's car. She bought it brand new. It's got 56,000 on it. The battery went low on it. I fired it up, and I let it run, and I noticed that there's water pouring out of my exhaust pipe. And if I revved it up a little bit, it was pouring more like a garden hose. And then I let it set for about a month or so, and I just pulled it back out and fired it up, and I let it run, and nothing came out.
Hmm. Yeah, that water is normal from combustion, and it builds up in exhaust systems. Most exhaust systems have little teeny weep holes in them to let that moisture come out, because combustion equals, among other things, moisture.
Yeah.
So water is basically coming out the tailpipe in form of steam, but you don't always see it. So it builds up in the exhaust system, and if the car is not driven regularly, particularly in warm weather, tons of stop and go driving, start it up, let it run, never drive the car. I mean, gallons of water.
Okay, this is not...
Yeah, this is not... His head gasket's not gone, and the engine's not bad. It's water from the combustion.
Say it again, Jeff.
There was gallons of water coming out of the exhaust pipe.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of water will go in there if the car gets run but not driven and it doesn't get steamed out of there.
But an O2, I mean, couldn't the head gasket be going?
It could be, but then you'd be getting tremendous steam out the tailpipe and the car wouldn't run right. Yes. It would overheat. Be kind of like your old North Star.
All right, that's enough. Thank you, Gordon Fricke. That'll do just fine. All right, how do we find out more about Barber and Fricke?
Well, you can call us, or you can...
You're on the web?
Well, very rudimentary. I've got to get a better website.
Web presence.
I'm so busy all the time that it's the last thing I think about.
Where are you in Hoosick Falls?
129 Church Street, which is Route 22.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for coming. And watch out for the construction on Route 7. heading home.
Maybe I'll go around it. I'll take Route 2.
Yeah. Perfect. Fantastic. Yeah. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com, Whitney's Farm Market on Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring a Boar's Head Deli with daily specials, bakery, homemade fudge, smoked chicken, and rib dinners to go, fresh seasonal native produce, and Black River meats, Whitney'sFarm.com. The Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, dedicated to strengthening our bonds with nature. Wildcenter.org for details. And Mango Tree Imports, a Saratoga Springs fair trade shop with gift items from 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for the calls. Sorry if we didn't take your call today. We'll try to get you in there next time. Our engineer, Zach Malloy. Our phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Deanna Fox will be in the studio to discuss all unique foods you can try at area fairs this summer. Well, that's good. So bring your cholesterol meds and tune in to Food Friday tomorrow at 2. Right now, though, stand by for news.